As the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 163rd day, the death toll exceeds 31,360, most of them women and children. People across the world continue to display their support for the people in Gaza, urging an immediate ceasefire in the besieged strip. And Israel's government ends its military cooperation agreement with the United States, calling the accord illegal. Thanks for joining us. Over 5 months into Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, the regime continues pounding the blockaded territory with indiscriminate airstrikes and artillery fire. The health ministry in Gaza says at least 92 people have been killed and 130 others wounded over the past 24 hours. At least 12 were killed in an Israeli strike on a residential building in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. According to the ministry, Israel prevents medical teams from reaching victims who are still under the rubble. Meanwhile, Israeli jets continue bombing residential buildings across the coastal strip, including Gaza City. The suffering in Gaza is not limited to just being targeted by bombs. According to UNRWA, malnutrition and famine are striking northern Gaza and is now moving to the southern areas. Since the onset of the Israeli war in early October, 31,645 Palestinians have been killed, most of them women and children. The head of the World Health Organization calls on Israel not to launch a ground offensive on the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where 1.5 million displaced Palestinians have sought shelter. Tedros Ghebreyesus said the escalation of violence in Rafah will lead to many more deaths and suffering. He called on Israel to refrain from the attack in the name of humanity. Tedros added that people in Rafah are too fragile, hungry, and sick to be moved around. On Friday, the Israeli Prime Minister approved plans to assault Rafah despite increasing international calls to halt the military operations. The senior leader of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the group is waiting for a response to its ceasefire proposal from Israel and the U.S., the regime's main accomplice in the Gaza genocide. Osama Hamdan said the initiative put forward by Hamas is a realistic one with clear details. He said that it provides for a swap of captives in Gaza and Palestinian abductees and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza. Hamdan said the Palestinian movement had, during negotiations, called for an end to the onslaught, the return of refugees, the dispatch of aid to Gaza, and the start of the reconstruction of the Strip. Hamdan touched upon the divisions within the Israeli regime on the war and added that Tel Aviv has achieved none of its declared objectives despite the atrocities committed in Gaza. He said that Hamas has told intermediaries that acts of aggression against Gaza must stop. Well, the Israeli regime has carried out fresh raids in several Palestinian areas in the occupied West Bank. The regime forces arrested a number of Palestinians during their operations. Monica Ndil joined us earlier from Ramallah for more details on the latest raids. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli forces this morning had raided the town of Ya'bad, South Jenin, and arrested a Palestinian who had been shot and wounded by the Israeli forces several days ago. The Israeli troops also stormed Nablus and mainly the old town of Nablus. For several hours, exchange of fire had taken place between members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces. Later, the Palestinian Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, the armed wing of Fatah movement, issued a statement saying that their members and their fighters clashed with the Israeli forces, and the members succeeded to detonate explosive devices Israeli military vehicles that stormed the old town of Nablus. In the town of Betunia, West Ramallah, the Israeli forces stormed this town and they stormed a number of Palestinian homes there, and a number of Palestinians had been detained from Betunia as well. In Qalqilia, this time the Israelis have stormed the town of Nabi Elias, and they set up a military checkpoint, an additional checkpoint at the entrance of Nabi Elias in Qalqilia, and arrested at least one Palestinian when he was passing through the military checkpoint to enter Nabi Elias town. In Hatan, West Beit Lahem, the Israeli forces have also stormed this town, and we have to mention that the Israelis have raided the old town of Al-Khalil, the occupied West Bank, and they arrested four Palestinians, the grandfather, his son, and two of his grandchildren.
People across the world are continuing to display their support for the people in Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocide in the besieged strip. The German capital, Berlin, was the scene of one of the latest such demonstrations.
We are here to demonstrate for Palestine, and I think it's not only about Palestine here, it's also about showing our anger towards the German media and the German politicians, because they have a lot of power and they decided to take a side. And even they use sometimes some wars for a human crisis or something like this. I can't believe it. I have the feeling that it's just an empty wars.
The protesters demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the liberation of Palestine and the establishment of Al-Quds as its capital. They carried blood-stained small mock body bags in reference to the large number of children killed in Gaza. Protesters also held up pieces of bread to draw attention to the issue of starvation in the besieged strip. Pro-Palestine rallies have been intensifying across Europe despite attempts by the governments to crack down on the public demonstrations of support. During a rally in the Austrian capital, Vienna, thousands took to the streets to slam the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
Free, free, free Palestine!
Waving Palestinian flags, the demonstrators gathered at Vienna's city center. The demonstration was part of the Israeli Apartheid Week, called by the BDS movement, which promotes boycotts against Israeli products and multinational companies who are linked to the regime. Protesters said taking part in the rally was their contribution to solidarity with Gaza. They said the European countries are complicit to the Israeli crimes. They also called for an immediate ceasefire and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. A correspondent attended the rally and interviewed some of the demonstrators.
We are demonstrating here because today is the 160th day of the genocide. They now propose the new idea of bringing relief supplies to Gaza by ship. But I think the real plot is to drive out the people in Gaza by ship again, like 1948. The second thing is that we are here to say that the genocide and the starvation must stop. Aid supplies must be brought in through the land crossings and not by air or ship. The US has the power to demand that from Israel. We are also here to demand an immediate end to the occupation.
I'm here to support a justice cause, which is Palestine, especially during those times where justice is being hijacked by those who control the power. And they misrepresenting what humans should do, how they should support each other, whether in the east, west, north, south, doesn't matter. At this particular time, it's not about west and east, it's about to be with justice, with be with human, and Palestine is not for Palestinians, it's for every human being, it's for everyone who suffers in this world, who feels what's human to be.
I am here because I'm an anti-fascist, and as an anti-fascist, I have to be an anti-Zionist, and I have to stand with the Palestinian resistance for the colonization of Palestine, and we have we are unconditionally solidarity with Palestine and Palestinian solidarity. And if you take seriously the claim to decolonize the world and the global south, you have to stand with Palestine.
I come to these protests because when I was 14 or 15, I had to introduce the topic of the Gaza conflict to my class in school. So before we got any of the kind of propaganda that they do teach in schools here, I got to do my own research, and I did. And I think like anyone who does even a half hour of research on the subject, I very quickly kind of recognized the horrors, and ever since then it's been very dear to my heart. And now with everything that's happening, I'm just glad that there are people that are coming every weekend.
The Nigerian government, says it has stopped its military cooperation with the U.S. with immediate effect. In our news review program, we delved deeper into the story and asked for some expert opinion. Niger's government says it has broken its military cooperation agreements with the U.S., calling the accord illegal.
The U.S. presence on the territory of the Republic of Niger is illegal and violates all the constitutional and democratic rules which would require the sovereign people, in particular through its elected representatives, to be consulted on the installation of a foreign army on its territory.
Abramana said the government revoked with immediate effect a military accord that allows military personnel and civilian staff from the U.S. Department of Defense on its soil. The declaration came just a day after a senior U.S. delegation left Niger, following a three-day visit to renew contact between the two countries. U.S. relations with Niger faces challenges after a military coup ousted the Western-backed president in the African country last year. However, the U.S. still stations some 1,000 troops in Niger at a desert drone base. Niger has previously severed military ties with its former colonizer, France. It forced French troops in the country to withdraw after nearly a decade. Fidel Amakye, Ozusu, International Relations and Security Analyst, joins us from Accra. We also have with us Jonathan Alfe Ansa, who's a publisher at Africa Briefing, who joins us from London. Welcome to you both. Fidel, let me first start with you, and I'm just going to quote the Niger's military spokesman, because he pretty much explained why this relationship is going to end. And I'd like to find out from you what your reaction is to, for example, how he said that the agreement that was signed between Niger and the U.S. back in 2012 was imposed on Niger and had been in violation of the constitutional and democratic rules of the country and its sovereignty. Tell us why this was imposed, what he means, and how it violated Niger's sovereignty.
Thank you very much, sir, for this opportunity. Firstly, the year under review, which is 2012, was a year when extremists were awarded in the Sahel. So in Mali and Niger, we found Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb and Ansar al-Din, a Tuareg-backed group that was sweeping across the region, taking cities in central Mali and in the northwest Niger. So that was a time where Operation Barkhane by France was started, and so it was the same time the U.S. Decided to establish a drone base in Niger in order to fight extremists. Now, the processes that led to that may have been not that thorough, or may not have followed laid down rules as the military junta claims. However, at the time, it was more of an emergency situation that brought the United States to the place. Currently, we've seen a coup d'etat in Niger, and the junta is having to cut ties with the West. And so France has been removed from Niger. And so this current announcement that the junta is ending its relations with the U.S. is not so surprising, despite the fact that U.S. foreign policy with Niger has been different from that of France.
Okay, well, let's get into that foreign policy. And again, I'm going to quote the
Niger's military spokesperson, who has said, Jonathan Ofsay, the government of Niger regrets the desire of the American delegation to deny the Nigerian people the right to choose their partners and the types of partnerships capable of helping them to truly fight against terrorists. And he said, Niger forcefully denounces the condescending attitude of the U.S. To me, it sounds like Niger is saying that the U.S. is not a partner when it comes to fighting terrorists.
Yes. They are, for the wording of the government spokesman, one word, you know, stands out: condescending. Okay, look, Niger, you know, is a small country, so-called impoverished country. The U.S., you know, is the world's only superpower, if you like, right? And according to the judge's statement, the U.S. did not follow the normal diplomatic protocols. You visit the country, I mean, you form the host government, and even state the number of the delegation, okay? But in this case, America did not do that. According to the spokesman again, his statement, you know, they just came in, even not on the date that was agreed upon. Okay, so that was condescending. And I believe that during the meetings they had, I mean, the U.S., as usual, might have, you know, tried to impose certain conditions, you know, might have, you know, given some threats, you know, because the U.S. Is not happy with Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger's increasing alliance with Russia. So that is what, you know, the U.S. was trying to counteract. But the U.S., you know, is failing, you know, to see that the geopolitical situation in Francophone West Africa is changing. They could have taken a cue from Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, you know, expelling French troops from their territories. Okay, they should have taken a cue from that and at least try to deal with Niger, maybe as an equal, but not in that condescending manner. So the reaction by Niger was natural. Niger wanted to, or wants to, assert its sovereignty, its independence, right? The dynamics in that region are changing. So this is what the U.S. has to take note. So in my opinion, what Niger did was the right one. It may come at a cost, but then asserting your sovereignty always comes at a cost.
Thank you very much for that. Fidel Amakye Owusu, International Relations and Security Analyst, and Jonathan Ofe Ansa, publisher at Africa Briefing. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, Our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The dawns of the month of Ramadan should not be missed. The annual Ramadan Quranic meeting, April 30th, 2019. One of the requirements for reciting the Holy Quran is that when you want to recite a Quranic ayah, you should definitely stress those parts that you would stress if you wanted to convey a message under normal circumstances. If we want to make a comparison, we can refer to the panegyrists who recite Persian poems. As you can see, they recite those words and those sentences that they want to convey in a way that is recorded in the mind of the audience. This is what we do in everyday conversations as well. When you engage in a normal conversation, you stress those words which carry a special meaning and purpose for you. You should recite the Holy Quran like this. You should stress specific words. You should recite Quranic sentences in a way that their messages and meanings are instilled into the minds of the audience.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Good words and sentences should be accompanied by good recitation. Sometimes it is necessary to repeat a sentence in order to instill it in the minds of the audience. So, you should sometimes repeat it. A few years ago, I may have criticized those who repeated Quranic ayahs too much. Now, I want to say that repetition is sometimes necessary and vital. With one reading, the message is not conveyed. Therefore, it should be repeated to 3 times. Sometimes you should repeat 2-3 ayahs together. I do not mean that this should be done to excess. I have seen that some Egyptian qura do this to excess. This has a negative effect. So, I do not mean that it should be done to excess. If we repeat something 8-10 times, this is not ideal. It may be common in Arabic singing, but it is not ideal in reciting the Holy Quran. However, repetition until the message is instilled in the mind of the audience is necessary. Sometimes one feels that a reciter recites the Holy Quran as if he were taking a book in his hands and reading it word by word. This is not good, and it does not fulfill the purpose.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
On June 18, 1994, when Francisco Oscar Lamolina, the referee of the opening game of the World Cup, blew into the whistle, over 77,000 spectators were shouting in jeers at Pontiac Silverdome Stadium in Detroit. It was the first time that the World Cup was being held in the U.S. For a month, all eyes all over the world were fixated at the event. The shining stars of the world of football, like Romario, Roberto Baggio, Hristo Stoichkov, and Gheorghe Hagi, filled the stadiums to the brim. With every goal, yellow or red cards, the stadiums were in uproar, like the day when Nigeria thrashed Bulgaria with 3 goals and the fans of the team were madly shouting out of joy. People who had traveled thousands of miles from Africa so they could watch the games up close. Those days were good days for the people in Africa, but not for all the residents of the continent. Right at the time when people across the world were glued to their television sets to watch Nigeria's exhilarating display of skills, in a part of Africa, one of the most brutal genocide in the history of mankind was underway. Apparently, Rachel Carson is the biggest murderer in history, and yet nobody was aware for a long time. Everyone admired Carson for being a nice human being and a great author, and also for her role as an environmental activist. She has been praised in numerous books, articles, and reports, but in the end, the mask was removed from her face. They said that the woman who had a charming smile on her face in all of the pictures and the only thing she cared about was nature was behind the death of millions of people in Africa. The deaths happened after she genetically modified mosquitoes. If we take a look at history, we'll find out that Rachel Carson's life in many ways had striking similarity with major criminals throughout history, like Hitler, who used to paint pictures when he was a young man, or Stalin, who was a choir singer. Carson was into art, literature, and poetry. She was born in Pennsylvania and graduated from Johns Hopkins University in 1932. After getting a degree in zoology, she started her career as a journalist. 15 years later, she displayed so much talent and skills in the field of aquatic creatures that she supervised all publications in this field. During those years, she tried books besides working as a journalist. Her books are on environment and the seas, which gained Carson fame. She resigned from all of her posts in 1952, so she could concentrate mainly on writing books. The most important book she wrote in that period was her autobiography. The US media, as well as many chemists and physicians, say the book changed the fate of millions of people in African and many other parts of the world. Carson's name turned into the nightmare of people who were grappling with malaria.
In Africa and Asia, the mosquito is a mass killer. More than 2 million people die every year from malaria, which mosquitoes transmit.
Based on figures and documents proposed by Dr. Gordon Edwards, an entomologist at the University of San Jose in California, stated in his paper that the elimination of DDT helped the mosquitoes that transit malaria to reproduce without any barriers. In a few years, the population of the mosquitoes grew so large that millions of Africans fell victim to the disease and lost their lives. According to Edwards in an article titled Bias, Misinformation, Half-Truth, published in 1992 in the Science and Technology magazine, The Silent Spring has been one of the deadliest books in history as it sent millions of people in Africa to their death. Some people put the number of fatalities at about 50 million people, larger than the number of the casualties in the Second World War. The documents leaked in the 1980s and 1990s by some tobacco company staff revealed that the owners of the companies had known as an established fact from the 1950s that smoking can cause cancer. In one of these documents dated 1953, Claude Tigo, one of the scientific advisors of Camel Tobacco Company, wrote to his director that the tobacco in cigarettes is one of the main factors behind lung cancer, and added that there is a direct correlation between smoking and lung cancer. A decade before that, Emma Harris Palmer, the head of the research center of Lord Yard, acknowledged that there is ample evidence to prove the link between smoking and lung cancer.
The company is Brown & Williamson, America's third largest tobacco company. The man they've set out to destroy is Dr. Jeffrey Wigand, their former $300,000-a-year director of research.
In 1996, another revelation was made on CBS's 60 Minutes program. Jeffrey Wigand, one of the personnel of the Brown & Williamson Tobacco Company, leaked significant information about the tobacco industry. Michael Mann made a movie out of the developments named The Insider, starring Russell Crowe, who played the role of Jeffrey Wigand. The movie received accolade by film critics.
Catch you in a lie. They can paint everything with that brush, you understand?
Everything you say.
I told the truth.
Everything you say.
And I can't defend you, man, with one hand tied behind my back because you keep from me what they can discover.
And they will discover everything, believe me.
I was young.
There are many documents like that. Yet, when the scientists were summoned to the U.S. Congress to testify about the addictive aspect of nicotine, they all testified that the substance is not addictive. Later, it was revealed that most of them were on the payroll of the tobacco companies. As U.S. poet and writer Upton Bill Sinclair said almost a century ago, "It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. The owners of the tobacco companies understood the meaning of this sentence very well. In today's world, money decides what people should know and what they shouldn't. Even worse, it is the big companies that decide to show a distorted image of the reality to the people, and they are ready to get the scientists on board to achieve their goals. For years, scientists and environmental activists have warned of the impact of fossil fuels on climate change. Ordinary people try to meet their end of the bargain and make the earth less polluted. On the other hand, a major company like ExxonMobil releases 320 scientific papers every year to argue that the company's oil activities and fossil fuel do not have much effect on climate change. In recent years, the company has hired thousands of scientists and has spent huge amounts of money to get its messages across the scientific events and undermine conflicting scientific findings to eventually reach its objective, creating fear among people. Nothing as much as doubt can mislead the audience in their decision-making. But this isn't all ExxonMobil does to create doubt among people. In 2016, they spent $9 million for their lawyers and lobbies in Washington to fail the climate change bill. The figure was $29 million in 2008. After 8 years, the senators and representatives have grown soft spots, and it seems it takes less to convince them. These measures have made many people in the US believe that ExxonMobil is an advocate of science. However, the scientific works in favor of ExxonMobil as it helps the company extract and sell more oil. Yet, in order to find out how major companies like ExxonMobil take science hostage to serve their own objectives, we can highlight one more case, the James Hansen case.
Well, I'm James Hansen. I'm the head of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies, and it's H-A-N-S-E-N.
Okay.
In 1988, James Hansen, a NASA scientist who had studied environmental issues and the effects of CO2 on the Earth for years, mentioned a phenomenon called global warming. He took part in a Congress session and raised the alarm over the phenomenon for mankind that can wipe off life from the face of the Earth. Hansen was now known as the father of global warming. His statements quickly spread in major international media. George Bush Sr. took advantage of the issue for his election campaign and talked about his administration's determination to put a bridle on global warming, but added, the issue still needs further study. After a while, the scientific advisors at the White House entered the scene in a collaboration with the industry lobbyists in the US and raised doubts about the claims made by Hansen. They and many other scientists argued that global warming has always existed and that the issue has happened during the Renaissance and sought to pretend the issue as a natural phenomenon. The issue did not stop by providing scientific reasons. They said the claim can lead to a reduction in production and can put brakes on US Congress and warned this is exactly what the communists and socialists want. Hence, Hansen was accused of advocating communism, However, after several years, it has come to light that many of the figures who lectured people on television networks against global warming had no expertise in this field and had been picked by the companies to oppose Hansen and his arguments. What's more, some of the people who were picked in debates on global warming were so frail that could not properly defend the issue.
Last Week Tonight presents a statistically representative climate change debate.
Good evening. Joining me tonight, a climate change denier and naturally Bill Nye Science Guy.
Humans are causing climate change, no question.
Wait. Before we begin, in the interest of mathematical balance, I'm going to bring out two people who agree with you, climate skeptic, and Bill Nye, I'm also going to bring out 96 other scientists. It's a little unwieldy, but this is the only way you can actually have a representative discussion. Please file in. Again, this is going to make the debate difficult. We shouldn't really be having it in the first place.
It was back then when global warming was labeled as a theory to further question its validity. In fact, the global warming issue was important for factory owners and governments more than anyone else. Because if everyone believed in it, and in case the regulations on CO2 were to be tightened, they would have been deep in trouble. So the companies, the media, and scientists affiliated with them resorted to strange tactics. For example, when global warming alarmists published a magazine, the opponents also published a similar magazine in the same size and color and even the number of pages to mislead Congress members. The interesting point was the magazine was signed by over 31,000 American scientists. The media stressed on the number time and time again.
Look, 31,000 scientists and engineers signed a statement to the contrary to what you just read.
The Oregon petition?
Yes.
More than 31,000 scientists.
More than 31,000 scientists and more than 31,000 American scientists rejecting global warming alarmism.
Political pressure forced NASA in 2004 to commit to the White House that it won't publish Hansen's studies without prior approval. What's more, the data on global warming were removed from public access. Hansen was also warned that he could not take part in regular interviews by NPR. They even manipulated the results of studies by Hansen. So he had to go to Congress once again and sit face to face with Al Gore, one of proponents of Hansen's theory. Al Gore continues to run a foundation to fight global warming. During the session, he asked Hansen to elaborate on parts of his report. But Hansen said those parts of the report were not his statements and they had been altered. In fact, a person named Philip Conney, who used to work in an oil company, was put in charge of the Bush administration's environmental policies. He received a report from the United States Environmental Protection Agency that had warned of the global warming. Connie had no knowledge on the issue. He edited the report and removed a paragraph and instead wrote, "These are just claims and speculations." Al Gore shed light on the incident in 2005, which was a scandal for the White House. Philip Conney had to resign a few days later under pressure. But the day after his resignation, Conney was recruited in the ExxonMobil oil company. That was exactly the time when Hansen was ridiculed and repelled by the media. Conney accomplished his mission. Because of the efforts by him and his colleagues to confuse people on global warming, today almost half of the people in the U.S. do not believe the issue. Besides the ordinary people, some top politicians in the world also think that global warming is a big joke.
So Obama's talking about all of this with the global warming and that, and a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry, okay? It's a hoax.
Donald Trump was the vanguard of the doubters. Just days into his presidency, he posted a tweet writing, "It's snowing and freezing in New York City. What the hell ever happened to global warming? He had better taken a trip to Greenland and the disappeared ice sheets before openly doubting the global warming." His remarks were in line with the flurry of doubts that the owners of major companies have been planting in people's minds for many years, so the industry giants keep going. Their survival depends on not understanding.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad, praise be upon
I am Muslim for all of time. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station. Choo choo ka-choo, it's the Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider, and here in the studio we have with us...
This is Asma. I am going to be here again in Youth Station with Brother Muzaffar, which is so much of a pleasure, of course.
You know, one of the things that I find really strange about this world is, like, you don't know who somebody is. Like, you're right in front of me, sister.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you could be a serial killer for all I know.
Maybe, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows that? Everything is possible. We're studying something in literary criticism, which is very interesting. The idea of language as unreliable thing. And since language is unreliable, human beings are unreliable as well.
That's really
scary. Because they could change at every moment.
I don't know why that really
scared me. So you cannot trust the words, even. You cannot trust the words, and you cannot trust human beings, because human beings are in a state of active change. They would every time change. So you ask them something today,
they
would tell you some things in specific words, but then the same question, if you ask them tomorrow, they would answer you with different choice of words. So language is not reliable. Human beings are not reliable.
Body language is not reliable.
Nothing. Human beings are in a state of always changing.
I had a friend called Kyle back in school.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Riley, if you're listening, assalamu alaikum to you, man. He's gone to Japan now, so.
So?
He had Asperger's syndrome.
Oh.
Asperger's syndrome. So he was really socially awkward.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where if he went to a school assembly and the head teacher was talking, he would think that the head teacher is speaking directly to him and he'd just start talking back.
Okay.
And he didn't. He couldn't recognize people's. I think he might get offended if I say all this about him, but I don't care. Kyle Riley, who he was my best friend, but he was like such a golden person. Like he had such a pure heart. Like he could not tell a lie. In our art class, this girl comes over. And she was like, Muzaffar, what do you think of this? And she showed me a drawing. And I was like, oh, it was awful. And I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, I think you can fix the shading over there a little bit. And
yeah,
I like the overall. Kyle comes along and he's just like, oh, that is awful. That is just dreadful. It would have been better if you've
so
never
honest.
Made it at all. If I was drawing that, I would screw it up into a she'd spent hours on this, by the way, hours.
Oh my
I would
God.
Screw it up, put it in the bin, and just start again. And I
at
could
least
see
his honest.
He was so like brutally honest, but I could see that like tears were swelling in her eyes.
Oh,
and
God.
I was like trying to nudge him to make him stop, but he wasn't stopping. He could not differentiate between if somebody's angry or happy.
Oh.
He didn't have that faculty.
Yeah, that would be so weird.
Yeah, yeah. So he kind of goes through life like that. He cannot tell if
so
you
he
are...
So he could not understand
he didn't
the
know she was offended.
Feedbacks of other people.
No, no.
Oh,
he wouldn't
that's
understand
too
it.
Sad.
He was
too sad for him and the people around him.
I loved him because I knew that if I wanted an honest answer, he would just give it. He doesn't know how to do anything else. Your internal self should perfectly reflect your outward self, mm-hmm. right? And that is something that I feel it's an art that we've lost, you know, where we've learnt to wear these disguises and these masks
yeah.
to show people, for example, that I am religious or I'm not religious or I'm this or I'm that.
All the masks that we put on.
Yeah, we're yeah. always wearing
the
masks.
The super ego. But still, I do think, you know, some people intuitively has this talent to read people's thought. Let's just put it this way, but this is not... literally going to happen. What they're good at is to read people's eyes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a professor who used to say that people's eyes are a window to
their heart.
And that's
yeah.
very true, I guess. People's are actually lurking behind their eyes. They are hidden behind their eyes and behind their tongue, of course. Whatever you say and the way you're looking at other people is going to tell a lot about who you truly are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is scary, though, because do you know my mom,
mm-hmm.
right? She's a teacher in the UK. So part of the training now is they teach you how to identify children who have been abused.
What good would that make?
Because so many children, and not physical violent abuse, you know the type of abuse I'm talking about,
yeah.
right? That abuse is so rampant now in the UK that teachers have to be given that kind of training. So, for example, my mum noticed that when, and these are very young children, when she went to the toilet or he went to the toilet, their behavior is different to other children. They'll look at the door, for example, or they will kind of close their body language or close. It's very sad,
yeah,
actually. It's really sad.
Really?
Do you know, when I came to Iran for the first time, I felt a tremendous relief and freedom where if I saw a child, I could smile at the child, I could pat the child, I could touch the child's head. In the UK, I would never dare to do that. So that's the society I've come from, right? You don't know who's who. You might be your teacher, but they also might have the unthinkable intentions. America's very, very similar, if not worse, you know, where you have...
I never thought that would be such a common thing.
It's so common, sister. You have no idea how common it is. A lot of parents are choosing to homeschool their kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes the teachers are like that. And have you seen the movie Unbreakable?
No.
Okay, you'll really like that movie, but the hero in there has this gift where if he touches someone, he can tell what crimes they've done.
Oh.
He gets visions of their crimes. And the movie basically explores American society as it has become, where an ordinary middle-aged woman who might be the mother of three, she's actually stolen something from a jewelry store, where somebody who just looks like an ordinary person
so
who you'd walk past in the street.
Would you like to have such a power?
Yes.
To take people's hand and understand who
yes,
they are?
Yes, I would. Wouldn't you?
No.
I would. I wish I did have that power.
I'd rather not to know about people more and more.
But sister, you're going to be in danger. Constant danger.
No, see, not... Okay, let's go for a break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yeah, so before we went to the break, we were talking about whether we would like to have this superpower where you can tell the kind of crimes that people have done when you meet them.
Yeah.
I said I would want to have that power. Sister said she wouldn't.
No, I'm the kind of a person that even if there is a notebook that telling all the secrets about you and it's right in here, I wouldn't touch it. I'm not so inquisitive about to know about anyone.
Okay. Well, that would be invasion of privacy. That would be reading somebody's diary.
It's the same thing with taking people's hand and knowing more about them.
No, it's not.
Maybe...
No, no, sister, you already make judgments about people based on their appearance and the things that they
but
say.
But I do not bring my judgments into practice. I give them chance. I give them too much of chances to change that judgment that I have.
Yeah, but... if your judgment was so accurate that you knew immediately whether somebody's good or bad, wouldn't that be a good thing? Like you could actually protect yourself. You could protect those who you care about.
We do that. We understand that. So as in talking, according to our cognition, we could recognize who's good and who's bad. Some of the people are so expert in putting a, you know, masks on their face so that you feel like they're good people, but they're not. But most of the time, I guess, all my judgments turn out to be true. Like
mine too.
Like when I feel like somebody is not good, that person is not going to be good. So from the very first...
What judgment did you have about me?
Okay, let me just explain it. From the very first moment, I try to just avoid them more and more. Just intuitive feeling that I get from them makes me to avoid them.
Yeah, some people call them like, I just get bad vibes from that
exactly.
person. I just get bad vibes. Yeah.
So I guess we have that ability already.
Yeah, but we don't know if it's accurate.
Most of the time... at least it turns out to be accurate. I don't know why, but for me, this is the case.
For me, it's that case. Maybe it's a literature thing.
Maybe.
Really, it might be something that we're hardwired to kind of... because at the end of the day, life is a story and you're just trying to suss out which characters are which, right? So maybe it is something to do with that because lots of people don't have that.
Exactly. Yeah. When I see them, I just wonder, come on, you don't understand that such a thing exists?
Yeah. My wife has it about other women.
Because women are too powerful in that intuitive power of disguising.
I will tell her that you said that.
Trust her. Women are intuitively much more powerful than men, I suppose, in their sixth sense.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Not maybe,
because
for sure.
They have to be.
Yeah.
They have to be more because they need to protect themselves
exactly.
and stuff. And.
Yeah, so I guess even if I had the power, I wouldn't like to dig deep in people's soul because I don't like to see anything bad.
No, I would love that power.
No. I don't like to know more of bad things because what I know already is enough. And I guess that's the only thing that would help me have this insight that not all the people are good. That is enough.
Yeah, but you're going to find out anyway. On the Day of Judgment, literally everything's going to be revealed and you're going to be seeing everything. That's going to be a freaky day, by the way.
You see, I guess that's only God who can know your truth. The truth behind you and I still love you. It's only God who could do that. But for other people, if I know who truly my friends are, I may not cope up with them. I may not go on with them. You know what I mean? About the truth behind their personality.
Okay.
Isn't maybe that a good even thing? if they know something about me, maybe even them.
I mean, if people knew my reality, they probably wouldn't say salam to me in the street.
So I'm telling you, that's only